welcome to Black Money Talks podcast. Black Money Talks is a real talk about money. We cover mindsets, culture, belief system, success nuggets, breakthrough moments, disappointments, failure, money ideas, and building generational wealth. It's a deep dive session to educate, inspire, and empower you to grow and multiply your money. Grow from financial survival to financial stability to financial sustainability, from prosperity to prosperity. Join your host, Deji Nehan, as he takes you on life-transforming experiences to talk about money and how to make money work better for you. If you want to go from money disaster to money masters, your host, Deji Nehan, join him as he interviews champions, thought leaders, and change makers in their chosen fields who have created an enviable platform for success that we can all learn from. His mission is to make you live more wealthy, happier, and also have a fulfilled lifestyle.
Good evening, baby.
Good evening.
And it's lovely to have you on our podcast.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. So I'll give you a chance to introduce yourself. But for those that may be listening for the first time, I welcome you to Black Money Talks podcast, where we talk with other successful Black community members. The idea is to start creating more wisdom and generational wealth within our community. So I have a fantastic guest with me today, and I'm sure you'll be thrilled by our story and you will learn something from this. So Bibi, can you tell us a bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and some interesting things that might be helpful for our listeners?
Okay. Thank you very much, first of all, for having me on the show. And can I just say that the initiative is just so timely, so necessary. And so we thank you on behalf of the Black community. Thank you for this initiative. As you said, my name is Billy Clement. And alongside my husband of small companies, and those companies cover a range of industries. So both of us have a legal background. So one of the things that we own is a commercial law firm in London that caters to small businesses. We also own, we publish a legal magazine called Law Digest, which is the premier magazine for African lawyers globally. We have a business management consultancy, a company that caters for high net worth foreigners that are not based in the UK, but are doing business with the West. So they need a presence in the West. So we do things like we register a company for them. We do their tax, their accounts, and that kind of thing. We also own an HR consultancy and a couple of other companies. But my personal brand is BB Clement, and it is under that umbrella that I do a lot of speaking and training pretty much all over the world now, and particularly in the area of entrepreneurship and leadership. I'm also the author of this book, which is called How to Go from Employee to Entrepreneur. And this book was published 3 years ago, and it has sold to date nearly 6,000 copies. So I'm very proud of that book. And I'm also the host of a weekly business show called BB Means Business, which airs on Star Radio UK every Tuesday at 1:30. And on that show, we discuss anything and everything that you ever wanted to know about business. And we have some really dope guests on there that give us lots of information and share their entrepreneurial journey as well, that help other people on theirs. That's me in a nutshell.
Thank you so much. That is such a loaded profile. Thank you so much. I can see you are into so many things, and you built a good brand doing what you do. Thank you so much. We're going to delve into some of those areas later, but just the first thing I like to ask guests is to know, I like a popular quote to say, some are born great, some achieve greatness, while some have greatness thrust upon them. How would you consider yourself?
Definitely the middle one. Some achieve greatness. In some regards, I think I was born great in that I had parents that loved me. Unfortunately, my mom died when I was very young, and I was the eldest of two kids. And I was then raised by my dad, who raised all of us. But in as much as I miss my mom, my father was an exceptional blessing. He really was a blessing. Because he loved his children very, very much. And he was very demonstrative of that. But he also imbibed us with his values. And his values were very much dream big, work hard, don't expect life to hand you anything. In fact, he used to say to me, he used to say, Bibi, life does not owe you anything. On the contrary, life is waiting to see what you are going to contribute to it. So from that regard, in that regard, I think I was born great because I was fortunate to have a father who loved me very much and made me dream big and gave me good values. But I think aside from that, everything else has been achieved. It's been a long, hard slog. But having said that, I'm a Christian, and the Bible says we should not forget that it is God that gives us the power to get wealth. You can have all the effort that you want, make all the effort that you want, but except God blesses it, you're just wasting your time. So to him be all the honor and all the glory for anything that has been achieved.
Thank you so much for that. We'd like to know a bit about people's background, and you've given us some insights already. One of the key things I'm particular about on this podcast is generational wealth, where we start to be aware of the things we do and how it's affecting others or how affecting the next generation. In your case, you have a dad that built you subconsciously things that would become useful for you in life. It gave you a mindset for you to achieve as much as possible. I always say wealth or legacy is not just about the money. There's a lot more than the money. And it left you something you will never forget. Like, you have to show yourself. You have to show up and become something. You have a play in this game. And that's quite useful. And I tell all fathers and all mothers that your kids are watching, and the legacy you are experimenting in front of them goes a long way. So let's be mindful of that. So thank you for sharing a bit of that. And usually we like to ask, you've given us a glimpse of that, but we'd like to go a bit deeper. What is there anything in your background that prepared you for where you are now? Are there any negative experiences or positive experiences, apart from what you've shared now, that you felt like, oh, looking back now, it's all now making sense? Is there anything you believe you could want to share with our guests, with our listeners?
Yeah. Well, like I said, my mom died when I was very young, and I'm the eldest of 12 kids. So it was very, very difficult. We had me in particular, had a very difficult childhood and youth. But I think my dad was, he was quite bereft, and he wasn't sure what to do with all these kids because, of course, my mother had always been the primary carer. So this happened when we were back in Nigeria. And so, as is the custom in Nigeria, if you're not careful, when something like that happens, they tend to farm out all the children to relatives to raise them. But I was determined that that wasn't going to happen. I wanted us to stay together and be raised together. So I knew the only way in which that was going to be possible was if I stepped into my mother's shoes very, very quickly, which I did. And I'm not going to pretend it was very, very difficult, because I was akin to like a general of a small army. And my daily routine was get up real early in the morning, make sure that everybody had their chores, they knew what chores they were doing, ensure that I oversaw that those chores were done, making sure everybody was dressed for school, they weren't late, they had their breakfast, we had enough money to buy enough food because there wasn't a lot of money, make sure that everybody ate. I was very particular. I didn't want people to say the reason why my brothers and sisters looked scruffy in school was because they didn't have a mother. So I was very particular that they always looked neat and well-kept. And then when they came back, you oversee things like homework and stuff like that. And when you have so many kids in the house, that's just us kids, not to talk of, you know, other relatives' kids that stayed with us and grew up with us as well. When you have that number of kids in the house of different ages, there's always some kind of fight going on. So I learned how to mediate, how to listen to both sides of an argument, that kind of thing. And then just help people through their different developmental stages. And I can remember many times I had to appear as a parent at my brothers and sisters' parents' evening, parents' teachers' evening, because there was no one else to do it, you know, that kind of thing. Then I learned how to work a budget at a very young age, because like I said, I didn't come from a wealthy family, so the money was in very short supply. So I had to learn how to make it stretch and make sure everybody ate, that kind of thing. So all those kind of things. Now, at the time, it was very, very difficult. But looking back, I can see that this was my training ground for leadership.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful. I'm actually grateful because I learned things that I would never have ordinarily learned. But I think that really, again, going back to my Christian values, I think anybody that God is going to use in a significant manner learns the ropes in seemingly insignificant things. I mean, like you think someone like David was a shepherd boy and he learned his leadership skills in the field with the sheep and all that kind of thing. But yeah, everything he learned served him in good stead later on in life.
Very good. Thank you. So it shows that, I mean, from whatever stage you have, it's not a thing about age or how old you are or something. You could, you have something around you to start showing your skills on. So thank you very much for that. Just out of interest, I mean, how old were you at this time? And what was the gap between you and your next sibling? And did I hear you said you were about 12? You were 12.
There are 12 of us, yes.
Okay, so how old were you and what's the gap between your siblings?
I was 11 when my mom died.
Okay, all right. So
we have triplets, that's why how many. Okay. So yeah, so I was 11 when my mom died. And the next one after me was, there's a 2-year gap between us, but she had learning difficulties. So even though there's 2 years, it seemed a larger gap because she had learning difficulties.
Okay, so just want to stress the fact that, I mean, at a very young age, 11, that's when you started mediating, doing business. I mean, it's like you were doing business, negotiating, and getting things done, getting people, managing people and stuff. So
yeah,
that's quite a fantastic thing to do at age 11. So thank you very much for sharing that insight. And I'm sure some people will be blessed by that. The next thing I'd like to ask really is, I know you've given us so many things you do now, and you and your husband have built different businesses, as you mentioned, for different segments as well. I know one thing I know for sure is success is not built overnight. I know when people say they had overnight success, that means that night would have been about 10 years or 15 years in the making.
Yeah.
And they just came out in the dawn. So that's my calculation of things. So how was that been for you? What was the transition? What was the aha moment for you to know, okay, I've done what I do. Now we've started. Did you start with all of these businesses together? Or you started with one, you saw that move? What was the progression for you, really?
Like you said, there's no elevator to success. Everybody has to take the stairs. And for me, it has been a long, hard, painful slog. And I really don't think I'm there in any stretch of the imagination. I really don't think I'm there. We've kind of grown our portfolio as we went along. The first company that we had actually bombed. We failed at that quite drastically. And we closed it down. So what happened with that one was we were importing specialist pasta from Italy. And this was a time when the British palate was still very, very, very boring. So we were importing specialist pasta like squid ink flavored pasta, things like that. But we were getting some traction and it was going pretty well. And then all of a sudden we got an order from an airline, a very large order from an airline. But we'd just gotten married at the time. So we really didn't own anything. And it was fantastic news. We were really excited, but they wanted a 90-day turnaround. They wanted to be a 90-day letter of credit. So that would mean that we would have to provide the product up front and they had 90 days which to pay us, which was okay. But the thing was, because we just got married, we didn't have any money. So we couldn't pay for the product up front. So we went to the bank and we asked them for a loan and they asked us what collateral we had and we had nothing. So they said, sorry, they couldn't give it to us. So we got so discouraged that we closed the business. So that was the first business that we had. And then we went and licked our wounds. And as time went on, we started something else. And I think the next business we started was in 2004. And that was a bespoke HR and employment law consultancy. And then we kind of grew as we saw more gaps in the market, we just added different, more businesses to it until we got our small portfolio.
Okay, very good. So is this, assuming that all the white, because you mentioned both of you are in the legal profession, is it assuming that that were ongoing while you were looking on the business side of things?
I'm so sorry, I didn't catch that question.
Were you practicing your, I know your husband have a law practice,
and yes, you're
a lawyer as well.
Yeah.
While you were looking into the businesses, did you have your legal practice? Were you practicing as a lawyer then?
No, well, initially when we started, we were both employees. But I kind of always had it at the back of my mind from watching people as I was growing up, that those who were wealthy were not employees. So I always had the back of my mind, I'm going to start a business. I didn't know how or when, but I kind of knew I was going to start a business. And then it was while I was practicing as an employment lawyer for a trade union that I saw a gap in the market, because my job was to give legal advice to our members that had legal issues at work and they needed support, maybe with a disciplinary grievance or things like that. But every day I used to get calls from small business owners and other employees who were not members of our union. And they couldn't afford city lawyers. So they would ring us and ask for advice. And unfortunately, I couldn't help them because we were designated or delegated just to our members. But I began to think, where do those kind of people go? Where do they go? So I started doing some research and I saw that there was a gap in the market. So that's what made me start my first company, which, like I said, was a bespoke employment law stroke HR consultancy, aimed at employees and small business owners, which I still own.
Okay, fantastic. So you are always looking around to see what can you do, what more can you do, where are the gaps, and you notice a gap and you want to fill that in.
Yeah.
That's a good way to see a business. So I would say, I mean, one of the best things you could do is to provide a solution to a problem.
That's right.
You found a problem and you gave a solution to that, and that allowed you to expand beyond your normal practice. So thank you for sharing that, and I hope someone will take that nugget and start looking at the problems they can solve. So that's the idea of entrepreneurship in any way. So thank you for sharing that. In all of this, have there been, like you've already said, I mean, you take your steps. While taking your steps to a level of success, you've agreed that you've not attained everything you want yet. Nobody ever gets to a point where they feel like, I don't want to achieve anymore. Were there times where you felt like you wanted to give up? Were there times, apart from your business failing, and I know a lot of people, maybe when they have the first kind of setback, they're kind of discouraged. Were there other major things, other setbacks that you have experienced over the years, apart from the one you shared with your spaghetti company?
Yes. My husband and I have, our first child is severely autistic and has a range of other disabilities as well, learning difficulties as well as having ADHD. So that was very, very difficult. So when he first got diagnosed, everything came to a stop, because it's not like this, I'm talking about 20 years ago, this is about 18, 20 years ago. It's not like now when everybody has a little, at least a basic understanding of autism or other special needs. Then we didn't know what it was. And we didn't know how to handle it. And you didn't even know where to go. Even for a diagnosis, we didn't know where to go. So that was very difficult. And immediately, once we got the diagnosis, we realized that somebody was going to have to give up their job to stay with this child and make sure that he got the help that he needed. And because my husband earned more than I did, I had to give up my job, which was very difficult for me because I had always worked. So the idea of staying at home was, it was a complete culture change for me and a complete culture shock. So that was very, very difficult. And because there wasn't a lot of help, we were facing it alone. Yes, that was difficult. But to God be the glory, we once I got to the stage where I understood what I was dealing with, and, you know, I grieved, well, we both grieved for, you grieve for all the things that you always dream for your children that will probably never happen in your case. So we spent quite a bit of time grieving and then adapting our family to the reality of what our life now was. But then we made a choice decision that we still wanted to be the very best that we could be in life, irrespective, and we have moved on accordingly.
Thank you. I mean, like anybody would know, parenting is not an easy game. More so when you have some extra level of consideration, in your case, a condition to support with. So I'm sure everybody listening would appreciate that that depth of what could go wrong. But one thing you said for sure is you didn't let that stop you. Like most people, I always say, I mean, sometimes we have something blocking us, either self-made or it was there, but we let that stop us from taking the next step, moving forward. And you took your time out, you grieved, you appreciated the situation, you and your husband worked out what is amicable between yourself, and you are able to still continue doing what you would have loved to do, giving your time to your child, and still be able to still express yourself in terms of what you would like to achieve. So that's quite a wonderful thing to, in a summary, to kind of say. So if there's anybody out there that feel like you, whatever your challenge, whatever your situation, I always say there are people that have experienced similar stuff. Key thing is don't let that stop you. Don't let that stop you from living your dream. So that's the key message. And thank you for sharing that. I'm sure that would go a long way for people listening. So we can see, I mean, life is not full of every time. In business, you know, the show, it's every time you are trying one thing or the other, not everything you try goes on well, as you have experienced in your case. Even on the personal ground, not everything goes as we wish for, but in the midst of it all, you still want to push up. I'd like to, at this point, I know you have a key message, and I'd like you to express a bit about the message you are trying to share with others, especially with your book, especially with your program. Can you just give us an insight into what that is about? What do you want people to get from your programs, from your books?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm very, very passionate about, in particular, the Black community in the UK. And I have been passionate about this for years. It's interesting that the whole COVID and Black Lives Matter thing has now kind of amplified my message. But I've been banging this drum for many years. A few years ago, I was reading some research, and they were saying that the economic footprint of the Polish community for that particular year, I'm not sure whether it was 2017 or 2018, was about 3 billion. This is the Polish community within the UK, about 3 billion. And when I thought about that, I thought about the particularly the sub-Saharan, African sub-Saharan diaspora in the UK. And in comparison, we outnumber them about 5-6 to 1. And yet we can barely find the economic footprint of the African diaspora in the UK. And this has always bothered me. Yeah. And for those of us who are older, should I say, more mature, I think that's the phrase we use now, we're more mature. When we came over in the 80s and the 90s, there was actually nobody to show us how the system here worked. Nearly everybody I knew was either a security guard or worked in care or was a cleaner. I remember when I got my first office job, I was almost like a king amongst my friends. And one of the mistakes that the community has made at that time was the first thing we did was let's get a job. That was the mentality. Let's get a job.
Yeah.
As I think that was a mistake. And we grabbed the first thing we saw. Many of us got stuck in the first thing we saw. I still know people who till today are cleaners and security guards. So the message that I really want to get out there is that we can no longer single-mindedly serve our employer without taking active steps to create, grow, and protect our own wealth. You cannot be dependent on a single source of income. The average millionaire has at any given time seven sources of income on the go at any given time. So how we expect to survive or thrive on a single source of income is beyond me. And I think not enough people have preached this message, because what has happened to my generation in particular is we are sitting on a ticking time bomb, a very fast approaching ticking time bomb. And the majority of us are facing a retirement, a potential retirement with very little money. Yep. And that's because, like I said, we have not been financially educated. And so this whole concept of developing different income streams has come to us very, very late. But better late than never. Yep. So I spend a lot of my time with business groups, faith groups, and all that, just trying to teach people how to develop different income streams and become financially free. And like you have spoken, made a lot of emphasis on leaving a legacy. We have to leave a legacy. I believe that if our children have to start all over again, rather than from where we stopped, then in some ways we have failed as parents. Our children should be building from where we stopped, not have to start all over again. But oftentimes I find that within our community, usually the only asset we have is the house. And oftentimes even that house, there's very little equity, if any, in it. Yeah. So, and it's not like we've taken the equity out to invest it in something that will yield some more money or will, you know, will work hard for us. Oftentimes we take out the equity to go and do silly stuff like bury our dead father in Nigeria and you know, impress people that don't like us anyway. Yeah. And these are the things that should be our children's legacy. So our kids go to uni, they come out with a lot of debt. They reckon that the average child or the average graduate is going to come out with at least 30,000 debt. When a young person starts his life with 30,000 pounds debt, when is he ever going to be financially free? When? I also really want to emphasize the other things that we need to do, particularly if we're thinking long-term. One, we must have a will. And our people are really superstitious. The minute you start talking about a will, they think, you know, that their days are numbered. But these are the things that other communities have that protect their wealth. There's no point in building wealth if you don't protect it. So you must have a will. And if you die intestate, which means you die without a valid will, the government can take up to 40% of everything you've worked for. 40%. So these are things that we need to have. Life insurance, again, is something very few people in our community have. But oftentimes, if you look at the Caucasian community, oftentimes their children's first taste of wealth is life insurance. Life insurance that particularly pays off the mortgage. So they inherit a home or something like that. So these are the things that I try to teach so that our tomorrow, our children's tomorrow, can be so much better than ours.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that. I mean, one of the things that got me going on this is the fact that as a financial planner, I see that on a regular basis. What I mean is, I see people looking good on the outside. It's not, I don't have a problem with that. But when you open the bonnet, there's a lot of things to worry about. Simple things, like you said, having a will in place and stuff like that. I know definitely people don't do that. I mean, if you even talk about having a lasting power of attorney, people don't even understand what that is, talk less of having something in place. I know you are a legal person as well, so... And to be fair, I know there is a lot of education going on in our community, which is making some wave. But the other part is, people are taking education; they are not taking action on that. So that's another topic for a different day. But I agree with you to always say that. I mean, now there is the likelihood that people are living up to 100 years. What that means is the retirement is going to be much longer. The state pension is not going to be enough. So people need to be thinking about what they are going to rely on going forward. One of the things I now, I now do within the Black community is to help people to create like a roadmap to see this is where you are now. If you're going to live to 100 years, this is what your resources need to be. This is what you have. These are the gaps you need to worry about so that people have a visual understanding of where they are and where they need to be. Because sometimes people don't know. And because there's a lot of things going on in people's mind, they feel like, you know what, I'm going to leave that till later. I wouldn't bother about that. But when they have a roadmap to say, wow, you are 5,000 short every year. If you want to maintain your lifestyle now, or whatever it is, it helps people to be get something. And I'm doing a lot of that. And I hope anybody that's interested will reach out. So thank you for what you're sharing. Thank you for the nugget. I see that, yes, you are building businesses up in the community. Sorry, my alarm that I set to remind myself to call you. That was down. Yeah, so I see that you're doing a lot in the community. You have a radio show which is sharing quite a lot of wisdom and stuff. One other thing I'd like to see is for businesses, a lot of people want to start a business. A lot of people desire to start a business. What do you think is the stumbling block for most people, especially in our community, that they have not gone ahead or gone forward to start their business? I want to know, and you want to share this because I know you've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs over the years. You've had your book coming from being an employee to an employer. So you have many perspectives to this situation. So what do you think is the major stumbling block for people not wanting to make some step towards starting their own business?
I think there are three main things. The first one is, we seem to have the impression that what makes a business successful is money. And so oftentimes people will say, oh, Bibi, I'd really like to do this, but I don't have any money. And can I say categorically here that money is not the paramount thing when it comes to business? I know that sounds strange, but it is true. Money is not the paramount thing. What you need is an idea. If you have an idea and you're able to put that idea down on paper, and build upon that idea, do your market research, who wants this product, what kind of clients would be attracted to this product, how much do I charge for this product, that kind of thing, what's my profit forecast, things like that. If you have the idea, I can assure you, the idea will attract the finance. There's also a misconception that in our community, there are no investors. That's not true. Let me say that here. That is not true. I, in particular, have a group of investors that are always looking to make their money work for them. Because to be honest, who wants to be working till they're 60, 65? So I have a group of investors who are looking as long as it makes sense. So oftentimes, I sometimes put a group of investors together and we do something like a Dragon's Den type thing, particularly for our community. So the last 3 months, we've helped two different businesses. And strangely, they were not even businesses that were based in the UK. One was from South Africa and one was in Nigeria, but they had brilliant, brilliant business ideas. And we were able to get them funding. So how much more those who are in the UK? So that's the first thing. It's usually a funding thing. Two is a skills or knowledge gap. I think we go into businesses for the wrong reasons. So-and-so is doing this business. It looks like they're doing well, so I'm going to join the bandwagon. We're almost like... I don't know, we have a herd mentality when it comes to business. Once somebody's doing it, everybody wants to do it, and then the market is saturated. Yeah. So what you need to do is make sure you go into a business that you understand, that you have the knowledge and the skills for. They suit your temperament. The skill set suits your temperament. And if you recognize that you have a knowledge gap, go and acquire the knowledge. Pay the price to go and acquire the knowledge. So sometimes I might have somebody come to me and say, you know, Bibi, I've always wanted to do this, but if I'm going to do this, it would mean I have to go back to university. And I'm 40 now. If I go back to university, I won't graduate till I'm 43. And I just can't do that. So when somebody says something like that to me, my question is always, so if you don't do it, if you don't go back to university, how old are you going to be in 3 years' time? You're still going to be 43, minus the knowledge, stuck in a job that paid, going nowhere, not living the kind of life you really want to live. So you might as well pay the price and do what you want to do. But I find the biggest barrier is fear. What if I lose money? What if I do it and it doesn't work? What if nobody encourages me? That kind of thing. Fear, I find, is the biggest barrier. Fear can either propel you or it can paralyze you, but you make the decision as to which of those is going to be applicable to your life. And I always say, what is the worst that can happen, really? You know, in some ways, I'm really grateful for this COVID thing, because I think it has helped us concentrate the mind on the fact that tomorrow is not guaranteed. It is not. Let's even forget 2021. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. Right. So we have very limited time on earth. Too limited a time for you to be doing something other than what you were born to do or be. So you might as well just get over your fears and do it anyway. Everybody's afraid, but be of good courage. Do it afraid. The worst that can happen is that you fail. And when you fail, you get up. There's no successful entrepreneur that hasn't failed. When you fail, you get up, you analyze what went wrong, you make sure that you don't do it again, you put things in place to ensure that you do it better the next time. And just like the Mary Kay cosmetics industry says, we fail forward to success. Just like a child gets up when he's learning to walk, gets up, takes a few steps, falls down again, gets up, takes a few steps and falls down again. No mother ever says to them, oh, well, you've been doing this for the last month, 1 month, don't adjust them. Nobody says that. Yeah. So in business, it's the same. Do it again. Get up and do it again until you get it right.
Yeah, I think those are very powerful things, really. So I know, like you said, feeling forward, it's a mindset thing. Either you see yourself as a failure or you are learning, and learning is part of the process to get to where you want to be. You mentioned something else that is very key, fear. And I know fear stops a lot of us in so many ways and so many shapes. You failed in your first business. Was there any part fear held you back? Did you think about that in your next project, in your next idea, for you to think like, no, that didn't go well initially? Did that stop you for some time? Or you were naturally blessed enough not to have any fear at all? What was the life for you?
Initially, it knocked us for six, because we knew that if we had been able to raise the money, we would have become very wealthy, because the airline wanted to be buying that product ongoing. But it taught me a lesson. Rather than make me afraid, it taught us a lesson. It taught us the importance of having personal assets, because that's really what was standing in our way. If we had different income streams, we could have been able to liquidate some of the that particular stream and invested it in that business. So let's say we owned our own home, we could have remortgaged. Or let's say we had a healthy share portfolio, we could have sold some shares. So that it really brought home the importance of personal assets. So it didn't make me afraid. I was just a bit disappointed, and that's why we closed down the business. But then we licked our wounds, and then we got up again.
Yeah, and you're better for it, because I mean, one thing failure teaches you is never make the same mistake again. You learn a lot from your mistakes. Yeah. So I mean, I always say, if you can afford not to make the mistake or learn from that mistake, that is the best way to learn. But even all in that, you still realize that you still make some mistakes even after you've learned from so many sources. I think sometimes that's just the nature of business or nature of the world. So you learn, you feel forward, and you're learning from that process. Because your own mistakes could be someone else. It could be a way for you to mentor others, for you to share your wisdom with them, as what you're sharing with us today. And we really appreciate you for taking the time. And so you say put your signature on life. How do you recommend people do that? And in what areas should they look into to put a signature on life? What that means to me, looking at that, is you have, I mean, as a Christian, you know, I mean, we have a purpose on earth. We are not just here just to be in existence. We have a purpose for life. How do you recommend, or how do you suggest that people put a signature on life? Right, Lucy there? Did I lose you?
I'm so sorry. The Wi-Fi is misbehaving, so I didn't hear that last question.
I did notice that. I was asking that. I mean, I was looking at your backdrop, and I know part of your key message is put your signature on life. So what I was asking is, I mean, yes. As a Christian, I know we have a purpose on earth. And how do you recommend, or how do you suggest that people put their signature on life?
Okay, I think the first thing, just like you said, is to recognize that you have a purpose. You're not just here to get up every morning, go to work, come back, watch a little bit of Netflix, and pay bills. That is not why you exist. I believe that God made each and every person unique. There are things that I can do that you can't do, and the things that you can do that there is no way I can do them like you do them. Each person has been given a gift, oftentimes more than one gift, but that gift is supposed to affect the world. It's not supposed to be buried. It's not supposed to just sit there. It is supposed to be used to maximum ability to affect the world, to influence the world and affect the world. And I find that the minute you begin to do that, the minute you begin to walk in your gift and your purpose, you almost find yourself. My husband was a non-executive director for a mental health trust for many years. And oftentimes they would deal with people who commit suicide, do inquiries into people who commit suicide. And he said that majority of people who commit suicide because they don't know their purpose. They don't know why they're here. That question keeps resonating around their head. Why am I here? And for as long as you're not sure why you're here, that will soon translate into, well, I might as well not be here. And there's a greater tendency to want to end your life. The minute you understand that there is more to me and I have something to contribute that only I can contribute, I think that should propel you to do something and begin to walk in that purpose and not be satisfied until you have fulfilled it, to pursue it with everything that's within you, irrespective of the hand that life has dealt with you. Pursue it with everything that is within you. Like you said, I'm a Christian and I strongly believe that one day I'm going to stand before my maker and give an account of what I did with what he gave me by way of gifting and purpose. I think I'm going to give an account of that. And so that's something that I think about regularly and informs the decisions I make and the path I take and the way I go out there and do what I do.
Thank you very much, Bibi, for sharing that. Something I always believe in, and I believe you, I assume you would agree as well. Perspective matters in life. And you have very vivid perspective on things. As a mother, of a child that needs your help and your support, as a business owner, as an employee, as someone that grew up without your mother, so you have so many perspectives. And those perspectives are a building block of what you are now. Based on that perspective, if you have to give an advice to a younger generation, and I say this because, like I said before, generational wealth is what this is standing for us to pass not just the money, the mindset, the belief system, everything else as a legacy to the next generation. What would you advise the next generation to do? What would you advise the future of our kids? What would you advise them to do based on everything you know? You've worked with people that have started a business. You've encouraged people to start their business. You've worked as an employee. What would you be recommending? What would you be advising people to focus on in the future?
The first thing I'd be advising them to focus on, same thing I said to my kids, get rid of the job seeker mentality. That day is gone. Start thinking about how you can be a job creator. And the sooner you start doing that, the better. also start becoming financially possible. Begin to ask how many, because many of us don't understand how many. So they need to start doing that. Then begin to use their gifts, their creativity, their gifts, how to discover and monetize their gifts. And one of the biggest mistakes I think our generation made, that our kids must not make, is we must learn delayed gratification. You don't have to have it all, and you don't have to have it now. Thankfully, in recent years, I've had the opportunity to get to know quite a few millionaires, and it never ceases to amaze me the kind of frugal life that millionaires that I meet live. I don't see this ostentatious lifestyle that I often see amongst those who actually don't have any money. They look successful, but they're not successful. I'm talking about those who have the latest Jeep, it's HP, they don't own it. And then they park it in front of a council flat that they don't own, and they owe rent on. So don't try and look successful, be successful. That's what I would tell them.
That's a very deep message, because I mean, people need to understand that the difference between status and class. So I think that portrays your message. So, and one thing I realized for sure is, I mean, in this generation of everything on demand, everything available when you want to access it, the microwave generation, as you would say, the computer generation. So I think it's a good thing for parents to start imbibing that culture of delayed gratification. And I happen to work with Christian Against Poverty, and I go to schools. And one of the key things that is the discussion point is people talking about the difference between what I need and what is I want. And I mean, I talk maybe from as early ages, maybe year four, year five. So that's quite a fundamental thing for them to be aware of at that time. It's not everything that you really need. Some things are more important than the others, and you need to learn how to make some choices and to let go of some things. So that's quite a fundamental thing that this generation, not just the young ones, even adults, as you mentioned, I mean, there are people that are showing they are rich, but they are not rich. So it's that delayed gratification thing that is missing. So thank you for sharing that. Before we round up, I would want to know, I mean, if people would love to, I mean, because you shared so many things and there is so much we can share on this podcast. How would you recommend people to connect with you? I know you've got a radio show, you've got a book. What would be the best thing? Because I always say, if you've not read someone's book, you shouldn't want to question them, or you shouldn't want to ask for them to give you for them to give you your time. You need to do some digging first on them before you feel like, okay, I want to ask the next level of questions. So where would you want people to connect with you, and how?
Okay, website is...
We would include all of this in the show notes as well.
Okay, so my website is www.bbclement.com. That's B-E-B-E, clement.com. And you can connect with me on social media, because I'm always throwing out nuggets that will help you in your entrepreneurial journey. On Instagram, it's bb_clement. That's bb_clement. And my Twitter handle is @bbclement. And if you're more inclined to LinkedIn, just type in my name and I will definitely come up.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. So like we know, I mean, this is trying to share more within the Black community. How do you feel as a community that we need to progress? I know one of the things, like you mentioned about other culture, the mindset is one thing. As I know for sure, I do help people to consider their financial protection and their family protection. And one of the tricks, like you mentioned, is some people use their life cover as a way of generational transfer, generational wealth transfer. Someone was sharing with me that the Jewish community take kind of insurance, a lot of that, with the intention that their next of kin would not use. So let's imagine they take 1 million. They would instruct the next generation to just spend maybe 200 of that and use the rest to buy another cover for the next generation. So in a way, they are passing wealth without having to do much. So that's quite a big mindset. And the other thing I noticed is there is a lot of collaboration going on. And people have different perspective about that. But I know for us to actually have that economic footprint that you mentioned before, collaboration needs to be one of those fundamental things we'll do. From your experience, what do the Black community need to do to get more collaboration for us to see more of the wealth that we are spending outside the community for us, for it to go around us first before we spend it to others? What would you be your recommendation?
Okay, you're so right. I think, thankfully, we're finally waking up to collaboration. And this is all in very, very recent times, during the COVID times. Sure. But I'm seeing a lot of collaboration being happened, and I'm really, really pleased about that. That has been a major setback for the Black community. Everybody has been doing their own little thing in their own little corner of the world, and they've been doing it to death. And that doesn't work. We need each other. But in order for us to collaborate, there are a couple of things that are going to have to happen. One, we have to develop an ethos of integrity. One of the reasons why we don't collaborate is because we don't trust each other. And sadly, for good reason. So I think each of us have to take personal responsibility for our own integrity. And it's really strange because people talk about this a lot. They talk about integrity a lot, but we have become so warped. And it pains me to say this, but it is the truth. So we're going to have to be honest with ourselves. We have become so warped in our morals, so to speak, when it comes to money and being responsible financially, that we don't recognize a lack of integrity in ourselves. We talk about lack of integrity in other people, but we don't recognize it in ourselves. So you borrowing money and without the intention of paying it back is a lack of integrity. You borrowing money and tell the person that you have it on Friday and on Sunday having to call you and you've switched off your phone, that is a lack of integrity. You saying to a class, I'm going to do work and you only do it halfway or you do it shabbily, that is a lack of integrity. You having employees and not being trustworthy with your employees. I know people who own businesses who don't pay their employees at the end of the month. There's always some kind of excuse as to why their employees don't get paid. That is a lack of integrity. You sleeping with your employees is a lack of integrity. We have got to bring integrity into the Black business community. Otherwise, collaboration is not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And then two, we have to have a consciousness, like you said, that we need to keep the money within the community, just like the Jews have. The average, I think, pound, I was reading somewhere, touches, I think they said, 18 people within the Jewish community before it goes anywhere else. That it doesn't even occur to us. We just spend our money anyway. I mean, look at something like hair products. Some of the greatest, highest selling products in the Black community are hair products, female hair products. The Asians are selling our products. And sadly, if you have an Asian shop and you have a Black-owned shop right next to it, 9 times out of 10, the Black person will go to the Asian shop. So again, we have to change the mindset. We have to consciously buy Black in order to be able to collaborate properly.
Thank you for that. I mean, to be fair, a lot of that is changing. There's massive improvement over the last few months. I mean, like movement like the Black Pound Day, which happens every first Saturday of the month, just encouraging Black people to spend within the community. So there is a lot of changes. And I can tell for sure that there's a lot of other things happening. One other thing I observe, I mean, and you said, I mean, there are not lack of investors in our community and stuff. When you compare an Asian shop to next shop, an African shop, you realize that maybe, I mean, people want to buy the cheapest thing possible. And due to cost, maybe the Asian have much more capital to do the business, maybe because they've been doing it for longer, or maybe because the Black community trusts them, as well as their own community trusting them as well. So they have much more skill. I think for one thing is, because most Black businesses don't have skill. Without that skill, they don't, their cost is maybe on the high side sometimes. And that, I feel, affects how they can compete with the others. How do you see that as a problem? Is that something that could happen to you to remove that kind of barrier?
With respect, I disagree. I don't think it's a matter of competing on price, which is something we always do. Whenever we think of competitors, we always think about competition on price. One of the things I've discovered in business is that there is nothing like a product that is too expensive. Nothing. If a client says your product is too expensive, you're just talking to the wrong client. That's all. So I disagree. So for instance, you can buy a pretty decent handbag from Primark for £20, but there are also people buying a Birkin bag for, I saw one on the online the other day, for £54,000, and they have a 3-year waiting list. So I don't agree that price is the determining factor. Oftentimes we have inbuilt prejudices against our own people. And this is the truth. You will actually hear some people say, I don't want to buy from so-and-so. I want to. Yeah. So we have inbuilt prejudices. That's one. Two, I'll give an example of something that happened a few years ago. I was doing some research. There's a street very near my house, and it's pretty much a commercial street, but it's very multicultural in its commercialism. So we have Asian-owned shops. We have a few Nigerian-owned shops. We have Eastern European shops. Quite a few, all on the same street. So I was doing some research into the behavior of the different people groups for about 6 months. I was just watching them and then writing stuff down and things like that. So I'll give some examples of some of the things, reasons why I think we're lagging behind. I noticed that none of the African-owned shops were opened before 10 or 11. None. Whereas most of the other communities were open at the very latest 8 o'clock, at the very latest. So a lot of that early foot trade, our community was missing. Yeah. Then we looked at things like consistency. So I would go to, let's say I'd go to a hairdresser, a Black-owned hairdresser, and I'd say, what are your opening hours? And they'd say, we'll be here tomorrow at 10, 11. That's what they start with, 10, 11. 10, 11 is what? It doesn't say anything to me. Whereas if I go to a Caucasian-owned hairdresser and I say, what are your opening hours? She would tell me 9 to 5. And I know that when I got there at 9 o'clock, she'd be there. I can't tell you the number of times I would stand outside the Black-owned hairdressers and they told me that they'll be there at 10. And this is 10:45 and no sign of anybody.
Yeah.
There's that. Then there's things like curb appeal. I mean, I don't even need to go into that. I've been to some shops. I'm not even sure what they sell. There's just so many things displayed in the window. I'm not sure what they sell. Then the signage. Come on, we scrimp and scrape on things that really, really matter. Signage is the first interaction with you. So if your signage is handwritten in some sloppy way, it has an effect. So I actually think it is those things rather than price. Because if your product is adding value to somebody's life, doesn't matter how expensive it is, somebody will pay for it.
Yeah.
So it is those things that we need to improve upon.
Yeah, I agree with that. When I said about the skill, it's just not the cost. It's about the skill to have a supported service to that as well. So given the right customer service, given the right consistency in terms of this is when, because one thing I noticed with the Asian community is because they have a community. So if they have a shop, maybe it's the husband there in the morning, so he knows that somebody else is taking the kids to school. The wife is back at 12 to whatever. They have cousins and aunties and brothers that can feed into them and stuff. So there is somebody there giving a service, which is not very common within the make it look bigger than it looks. You feel like this shop is always open, almost 24 hours. Like, who's running this? They are living upstairs. Somebody is there. They only go out for lunch or something like that. So they have the skill to make that happen. But
that's not what the same thing
in that. So that's what I mean in that regard. So we've shared so many things. I mean, and from what I would say from that is people need to take business seriously. So very simple things that needs to make you stand out as a business. It's not always about the money. It's not always about how much you have to buy goods or something. Like you said, simple things as signage, simple things as getting into a shop and the shop looks presentable. It looks like this person is out of a business, goes a long way to determine what sort of business you're doing. So thank you for sharing that. I'd just like to know, I mean, is there any nugget you would like to leave us with? And the reason I ask that is I know you've shared quite a lot. There's a lot of things we'll be able to pick from everything you've discussed and a lot of sound bites that people could just remember that and feel like, yes, I want to move on that. But just for us to put a close to this fantastic episode, is there anything you would like to share? Any special thing you would want to leave us with today?
Business wise or personal wise?
Everything. So I always say, as a financial planner, there's no difference between business and personal life. Your business life affects your personal life. Your personal life affects your business life. My pastor will say that your bedroom determines your boardroom. So whichever you feel would make a difference to someone listening, I'm happy to hear that.
Okay. Like I said earlier, we have very, very little time on earth and too little time to be doing anything other than what we were born to do and be. So if you are on a path that when you sit down at night, when you lay down at night, you know that this is not the best that you can be. You have so much more to contribute to the world. This is not the dream that you want for your life. Then I would say whatever you need to do to get to, from where you are to where you really want to be, do it. Because there is no greater, there's no worse thing in life than get to the end of your life at a time when you should be looking back in your old age and your memory should be keeping you warm. And all you can reach for is a bunch of regrets about all the things that you would have done, you should have done, you could have done, but you never did.
Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you very much. And I always say, I mean, 100%, like I said, I've been doing a lot of research about how long much work we would lose. So it's likely we live up to 100. And having regrets is the worst thing. I mean, there's a book I can't remember now, when they looked at people on their deathbed and they want to know what was their regret. Yeah. And busy things like not maybe having time with their children, not going out to do what they believed in, not doing what they are passionate about, or living the life of their parents. Whatever that is, they had so much regret. And I always tell the kids, and anytime I go past a cemetery, I always say, you look at the cemetery, this is the richest place in this neighborhood, because a lot of people have died with their potential buried with them. A lot of people have died with their businesses buried with them. A lot of people have died with their conglomerates buried with them because they were too fearful to put their signature on life. So that is a fantastic way. That is a fantastic way to end the podcast. And I really, really appreciate your time. And, if you've not listened to this podcast well enough, I would say in summary, put your signature on life. Live a life that matters. Live a life that would be something you'll be remembered for, something that will be your legacy, something you'll be proud of. So, and it doesn't have to be the biggest thing. Very little things matters, and that could be your own story. So thank you for listening, and please find some time to dig in more into what Bibi have shared. I would put some of the show notes here so that you can connect with her and you can start learning along. And if you have any collaboration in the community you would like to reach out, please reach out to her. And so the idea is for us to network, collaborate, and do a lot more within ourselves. So thank you for listening, and please, I would see you on the other episode. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that you've enjoyed the Black Money Talks podcast, what are you going to do differently? Remember, dreams without actions leads to frustrations. Decisions decide destiny. Make your decision count now. Be the game changer. Make the shift. The world will celebrate you. Join our community to connect with other game changers. Build your network and your net worth together. Subscribe so you don't miss out on a life-changing episode. Lastly, live more wealthy, happier, and a fulfilled lifestyle. Leave your mark on this world. Leave your legacy. Thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe and join your host, DJ Nahan, on the next podcast. Don't miss out.